is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, tell your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls, and if you want to advertise with us, make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, my co-host Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. And Cody, so these ESPN front office rankings that just came out today aren't really very kind to the Bulls.
Subjectivity would be the first word we need to
very much so
throw out here. I'm not entirely sure what ESPN's formula is for this, but a basketball panel, their forecast panel, which apparently uses a lot of brains and a lot of math. It's touted as being almost as good as John Hollinger's forecasting models and Vegas forecasting lines as well. Well, this ESPN model ranks the Bulls 28th out of 30 in the NBA in what they term management. And by management, they do not mean the front office in particular. They mean management of an entire organization determining on-court basketball success. So from ownership to front office members to the coaching staff, ESPN rates the Bulls 28th out of 30 in the NBA, only above the Kings and Knicks, Sean.
Well, I think they got the two worst ones right. It's pretty hard to argue with that.
I would put the Kings last, maybe.
Well, hey, they're going to hire Sam Hinkie pretty soon. Or they're
Kings
are
29th. I think they maybe should have been last. Anytime your GM comes out and says he traded maybe your best player of the last 15 years for a deal that was less than what he had 28 to 48 hours earlier, I think that needs to be automatically last place, especially when you have an owner, too, in Vivek Ranadive, who once suggested they should play 4-on-5 on defense so they could have a cherry picker get buckets on the other end. Well, Kings should have been last.
I see. I would argue that the Knicks are properly rated as the last team on this.
Dolan's problems are more off the court than it is determining basketball success,
which has been tremendous under Phil Jackson. Yes. He keeps trying to force the triangle down people's throats and alienates Carmelo Anthony through the media. And, I mean, it's just a mess.
It's tied for 30th. That's what they should have been. Even though you can't tie for 30th, it would have been tied for 29th.
Well, but this is a scientific formula.
Tied for 30th. The Bulls, though, 28th on this list does not reflect well on the ownership group of the Reinsdorfs, the front office of John Paxson, Gar Forman, nor the coaching staff led by Fred Hoiberg, Jim Boylan, obviously the associate head coach there for the Bulls. 28th seems a little tough on the Bulls. I don't think they're probably worse than the Magic, for example, who have been swimming in no man's land for many more years and haven't made the playoffs. And this model apparently was supposed to take in the short-term and long-term basketball outlook, which I understand the Bulls in many ways is bleak when you see Jimmy Butler being a hero and a lot of nights not any help for him and thinking there's no other star besides Jimmy and you're running him into the ground. But look, the Bulls also have made the playoffs far more recently. They are also a team that even as ugly as the Hoiberg era has been for its basketball problems, they're basically 500 in the Fred Hoiberg era, a couple games under. Like, this organization, many fans would say, Sean, is an embarrassment because of the high standard they set for themselves. Not an embarrassment because they're actually one of the worst teams in the NBA.
Well, I think there's a big part of, you know, what the backlash has been to, you know, the current regime is that there's this sense that they're just kind of regressive and not really, you know, on the forefront of certain things the way that teams are, you know, the little things like mismanaging second round picks and
firing the most successful, second most successful coach you've had in franchise history.
Right, and then just stuff like only hiring people who have Iowa State ties, like in the organization. There's a there's a perception that they're kind of, they haven't really explored all the avenues they could to be successful the way that an organization like the Spurs or the Rockets or one of these ones that's going outside the box to do that kind of stuff. But I would agree with you. The Orlando Magic are a complete disaster, and I think they should have been ranked lower than the Bulls. Like, who is the one? I mean, the difference between them. Yeah, okay, neither of those teams are very good right now. And yeah, I think Frank Vogel is a better coach than Fred Hoiberg. But if you look at the job that
at least the Bulls' bad trade this year involved giving away a seventh man in Doug McDermott, who you already agreed wasn't going to be a frontline starter, and an expiring contract in Taj Gibson to get bad players in return. The Magic traded away Victor Oladipo last summer and the number 11 overall pick for a player they had for 3.5 months and didn't like and traded for Terrence Ross.
Right. I mean, the other thing is, I mean, if you look at that Magic roster, like, is there anybody on that roster that you feel like is a star or is you're even sure is a good rotation player?
No,
is
there a single guy? Really. No. We need to focus on the Bulls here, though.
Right.
Let's break it down. Ownership. I'm of the belief, as much vitriol that gets thrown the Reinsdorf's way, as an owner, I think most owners fall into the category of probably detached, largely from the coaching staff and the players in the organization, and probably don't, in the NBA at least, don't really actively help or hurt a team a whole lot by way of wins and losses. I'm saying there's certainly owners out there that set a tone of being cutting edge and investing money in as many places as you possibly can, but this isn't baseball where you're like the Yankees or maybe the Cubs with Tom Ricketts here in recent years, where they're like, open up the checkbook, give as much money as you want to get as much talent in here. There's a salary cap in the NBA, Obviously, a soft salary cap so you can delve into luxury tax in a way that you can't, for example, in the NHL, obviously, where ownership's checkbook doesn't matter whatsoever at all, really, in that regard. So, to a degree, the checkbook doesn't matter so much in the NBA. I think the Reinsdorfs, they're just kind of in the middle. I don't think they're out there actively making the Bulls better on a daily basis. I don't think they're really inhibiting the Bulls either. I mean,
right,
the decision
about, like,
to fire Tibbs was a front office one, and they said, go for it, hire your new guy. They paid Tibbs $4.5 million to go away because they thought it would be better for the organization, which might have obviously proved to be the wrong call here. By ways of wins and losses, they would have been better the last 2 years if Thibodeau was their coach.
Well, I think the issue with that decision wasn't so much they fired Tibbs, it's that they hired Fred Hoiberg without a real coaching search, and that reflects, I think that reflects more on the front office and the job that they did. They were supposed to go out and interview candidates and try to find the best one,
Nationwide search,
that's what they said they were going to do, and then 24 hours later, they had already, like, nailed down the
contiguous two states, Iowa and Illinois.
Absolutely.
The old 5-hour drive to Ames. But
like, that's the kind of thing where...
Where do you fall on the Reinsdorf? So, like, do you think they actively make the Bulls better? Do you think they actively make them worse, indirectly make them better or worse? Or they just... To me, they feel like they're another ownership group. And I think they could do more to put the Bulls on a cutting edge when it comes to analytics. I believe your colleague Stefan Ngo at The Athletic has written about invest more money in a shooting coach. Some of these staffers, the Bulls might not go nearly as deep as other organizations. Stuff like that ownership could set the coat or tone on and hire some more guys. But I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint saying they make them better or worse. Like, to me, it feels in the middle. I just don't know what you think.
I would say middle of the pack, but then I would also... my thing is that, they're Reinsdorf's biggest detriment is that they're loyal to a fault a lot of the time with, the way that, John Paxson and Gar Forman basically have unlimited job security because they've been with the organization forever, and Jerry Reinsdorf has always been really loyal to his guys, and there are people who have been with this organization forever, and, sometimes people outstay their welcome, and it's just not, or outlive their usefulness, shall we say, and the Reinsdorfs haven't really been willing to make a big change in that regard. But, this is not, you want to talk about the absolute worst owners in the league. You're talking about, people like, obviously, we just talked about Jim Dolan. We talked about Vivek in Sacramento. We Robert Sarver in Phoenix. Like, the Rising Stars are not on that level, but they're also not nearly at the level of, like, the Holt family in San Antonio or Mark Cuban or...
the Lakers.
Or the Lakers or, you know, that...
Warriors.
Right.
Stuff like that. I mean, even Dan Gilbert in Cleveland, I mean, he spent as much money as he possibly could. He basically... Kind of, is it fair to say he groveled to get LeBron back to
Absolutely.
Cleveland? Probably like a guy like that.
They won a championship.
Done so much.
They won a championship because I mean, even though you can say whether LeBron was the one that orchestrated a lot of those moves. Dan Gilbert had to sign off on yes, I'm going to sign the checks, and they brought in J.R. Smith, they brought in Mozgov, they brought in Channing Frye, they brought in these guys that were helpful to them winning these titles.
So much of this is the long game, and we should point out that like Michael Reinsdorf, as the president CEO of the Bulls now. Has a very, very big say in the organization in a way that Jerry Reinsdorf just isn't around the Bulls that much like Michael is. So I don't think he's apt to make quick rush decisions. And I know a ton of fans call for Gar and Pax's jobs. But
we can call him Gar Pax.
Yeah, yeah. 2 years ago, I mean... There were still a lot of people who agreed after they fired Tibbs. I know many disagreed, but a lot of people still thought, oh, Bulls in good shape. You know, they're going to innovate themselves offensively and go to the next level here and be a juggernaut of sorts, you know, maybe finish second in the Eastern Conference. There were a lot of experts predicting the Bulls to take a leap into first place in the East, not necessarily
well,
the finals.
Well, this is what I was getting. This is what I was just saying a little bit ago, which is that the problem with that decision to fire Tibbs wasn't that they fired Tibbs, because I think I don't want to relitigate that whole thing, but there was fault on both sides. It was probably time for them to go their separate ways, but both the process behind hiring Fred Hoiberg, which is that he was their guy for 2 years before that and they didn't have any real coaching search, and just how bad he's been, you know, frankly. Those are the two things that sunk it. It wasn't that they fired Tibbs, it's that they fired Tibbs and replaced him with someone who hasn't been good.
I see from the ownership level, though, like, they don't want to make rash decisions.
Right.
So that's why they're going to stick it out. And look, I feel like you and I have been plenty critical of the front office on this podcast at various times and what we write, too. Like, I don't think either one of us has ever wrote the sentence, the front office guys need to go, yet. Like, if the Bulls had turnover come, I could completely... understand, and I do think if this keeps going that you got to look really long and hard at Gar Forman's job. I still think he has proved to have some good eye for talent and has a lot of scouting skills over the years, but they've made a lot of bad decisions too. So if you get together and embrace more of this, the front office can still obviously turn it around. You know what I mean? It's the string of misses they've had previously. Like, you haven't written, I don't think, that they need fired. Like, people...
My colleague Stefan Noh did.
He's written it 100 times. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right. I personally haven't written that. I'm not really huge on, personally, just as a personal... I'm not huge on the idea of writing, hey, this person who has a job should be fired from their job. Like, that's not a place I like to go a lot of time. You and I have both certainly been critical of a lot of things that the... front office is done, but this is the same, this Gar-Pax is the same group that found, they found Taj Gibson in the draft, they found Jimmy Butler.
Look,
they've done good things. They found Felicio.
Pax came
undrafted.
On board when the post-Jordan era dynasty, or the post-Jordan dynasty era ended, and they started their first rebuild, and it was a disaster. Pax came on and fixed it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then they went through a lull, the end of what, the Skiles era, and then the couple Vinny Del Negro years, and then he built it again. Now the question is, can they build it a third time? I know a lot of people say that was luck because of the Derrick Rose ping pong balls falling correctly for the
number
one pick.
They surrounded him with other guys. They found, they got Joakim Noah, they got Taj Gibson, they found Omer Asik in the second round.
Do I think there are really bright minds out there that could do an excellent job and build the Bulls back into a heavyweight? Yes. I also think it would take them time, several years to do that. A couple draft hits and a big signing, something like that, surrounding with the right talent. Do I think Gar and Pax could do that again? Yes. You have to ask yourself what's more likely to happen if you're ownership. So I think you say lifetime job security, and it certainly always looks like that for those guys. And but at the same time, that just gets back to, like, this is what Bulls ownership does. They show patience. I don't think they're out there spearheading anything on the cutting edge. I don't think they're making decisions and shortchanging the Bulls to be a bad team and putting them in an awful position, though. Either is where I would fall. Now, when we're talking about front office aspect of this, I would say that when you look at short-term and long-term success for the Bulls right now, the front office currently has the Bulls in a very precarious position for that, because they haven't hit on recent draft picks, and they made this poor trade in acquiring Cam Payne, who's going to add nothing for the future, and it's basically Jimmy Butler looking forward. And how do you build around him, and whether you flip him for a headlining young player and maybe some other pieces? So that, I see why right now, when you look at it, these rankings, I'm guessing, are not reflecting anything that happened in 2008, anything that happened in 2011 or 12, other than whether you still have a good player that you chose then. When you put it in the position of now, the Bulls front office has probably done in the bottom, what, 5-8 jobs in the league over the past year or two, I would say.
Yeah, I would say so too. And you also have to keep in mind, this isn't reflecting whether the people who put this list together are guessing whether they're going to trade Jimmy Butler and who, yep, and how whoever they draft with
current assets. Pick
they, right, it's current. Because right now, like you said, yeah, they have Jimmy Butler, who is a top 10 to 12 player in the league, and then they really don't have much else when it comes to guys that you feel like are going to be contributed for years to come. And that's a problem, considering, you know, how much they've invested in, yeah, we want to develop these young guys. A lot of these young guys aren't very good, and you have to put that on management to some degree.
Portis and Valentine, I still think, obviously, too early to tell.
I agree. Jaren Grant, I think you and I both are on the train that he can be a good point guard eventually.
Yeah, at least a rotational guy, yeah, which is more than what Fred Hoiberg is playing him as.
And it's more than I think Cam Payne is going to be.
Yeah, that's very true. And I thought they did an excellent job with the Derrick Rose trade.
They did. I mean, even if Jaren doesn't turn out to really be much, they got a starting center on a really good contract in that trade.
Yeah,
for a guy that, you know, and we talked about the Rose trade a ton when it happened, but you and I both thought that if they were going to trade Derrick Rose, they would have to, like, attach a pick to him to get someone to even take him, and they actually got at least one really productive player out of that trade. So you have to give them credit for that.
So the question is, I mean, you go to the coaching staff, and I think the job that Fred Hoiberg has done in his 2 years in Chicago, he's been dealt a tremendously awful hand.
But he also has not done himself any favors in how he's managed it.
Correct. And I've said this several times, as ugly as the on-court product has been, I think it's his off-court relationship with the players and how he's handled guys playing and then communicating that to them that's been his biggest problem. And I know that the Bulls will push back at the communication issues and publicly and privately, but look, I mean, there's
eight or nine guys have said on the record that they don't know what their roles are.
It's all adding up. So he has not done a good job in his almost 2 years now as Bulls coach. So you have to put the coaching staff in the bottom tier of the league too. What they're proving, the stats bear it out too, that they're absolutely awful at creating offense out of timeouts, for example, on plays that Hoiberg draws up. Jimmy Butler has largely ignored Fred for stretches. We have reports that Wade and Rondo and Butler don't pay attention to their coaches' play calls. Like, all of this factors in, so I see how the Bulls, I guess, get to this 28th place ranking out of 30 for management as an organization.
Is Fred Hoiberg the worst coach in the NBA?
Because
it's like, we're at a point with the league, like, I'm just going through it in my head, like, every team's coach, there's not a lot of, like last year you could say, okay, well, Randy Whitman is just awful. Byron Scott in LA was just awful. Like, there's really not a lot of guys you can look at. If you look at this list, like, tell me which coach. Like, I guess I have no idea if Earl Watson is a good coach or not.
What Earl Watson did the other night in getting Devin Booker 70 points, it was an amazing accomplishment for Devin Booker. But it was also shameless, though, for Earl
hating.
Watson and fouling when you're down 17 points and stuff. And I see why the Celtics would be mad, but I mean, 60 points is be an amazing accomplishment for Devin Booker, but I question what Earl Watson is teaching the Suns. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Largely, like, I see a lot of stunted progress from them as well. Yeah, I mean, Fred's been one of the worst coaches in the NBA. There's no way around that. I would have to think longer and harder about it. I mean, what do you think?
I think he's the worst.
You think he's the worst coach in the NBA. So are you justifying the ranking here then?
I wouldn't have had them at 28 because, like, as we've talked about, I think Orlando is in a worse place and probably Phoenix. I don't think New Orleans is just because they have Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. And so, if you have two of the 10 most talented players in the league, like, you should be able to do something with that. But I'm saying I would maybe put them more 24 or 25 instead of 28. It's not a huge, like, it's not like I'm saying, oh, they got a job, they should be in the top 10 or whatever. But I think 28 is a little bit harsh.
So we're saying, too, basically, again, this is focused just on basketball.
Yes. Because in terms of ownership, if you want to expand it about business and stuff, yeah, they sell a ton of jerseys. They make a ton of money because Michael Jordan played there 20 years
ago. They do an excellent, excellent job of marketing themselves. There's no doubt about that. Now, if you want to make that a black mark against the Bulls because you think they're prioritizing marketing over winning, be my guest. But I think those are, not completely mutually exclusive. I think they're not hand in hand whatsoever.
Well, how about this though? We're talking about the Bulls, where they rank as an organization, and this is an issue that the Knicks have run into. This is an issue that the Lakers have run into. Also, these are the three franchises when you look at like which teams are in the biggest markets, which teams have the most history and the most prestige. You know, the Celtics are in a really good place right now, but those other three, the Bulls, the Knicks, and the Lakers, they're in the biggest markets. They have the most history that you can point to. They're not free agent destinations. Kevin Durant didn't even give the Lakers and the Knicks both tried to get Kevin Durant. He wouldn't even give them a meeting. The Bulls, the two biggest free agents that they've signed ever are washed up Dwayne Wade and washed up Pau Gasol. They've never gotten any of these big guys. Like the Bulls, like just with the history and with Chicago being a city that's really attractive to live in and also not as expensive as New York or LA to live in, it's the kind of thing where they should be at least in the running to get these big free agents. It's not, and I think it's kind of a reflection on the organization that they're never really in the running to get.
That's an excellent point, and that does speak to why an organization would have their management called into question from top to bottom. So, that's really harsh. We just basically said the best part of the Bulls organization, well, I would say A, their marketing, B, we're saying ownership is better than the front office and the coaching staff. That's a trickle-down effect, too, because, front office could have kept a much better coaching staff. Now, I wonder what these would have been 2 years ago. Like, how would we have talked about this 2 years ago when Tibbs was still the coach, or 3 years ago when Tibbs was the coach, and they were still winning 50 games a year and grinding out victories? Like, are they a middling team, or are they, like, a top-8 team? Does just making one bad decision reflect you from dropping in the top tier to the bottom tier of the rankings?
Well, I think the other thing we have to keep in mind is they probably would have been, and I'm sure ESPN has done lists like this in the past, and I haven't gone back and looked at where the Bulls ranked, but where would the Bulls be ranked if Derrick Rose hadn't blown out his knee?
Well, that's a...
Because that really shifted, and I don't want to just be out here excusing a lot of things that the organization has done in terms of, front office moves and stuff like that, but, Derrick Rose blowing out his knee and never being the same player after that really did shift the entire fate of this franchise. They looked like they were going to be a title contender for years, and then Derrick Rose blows out his knee, and they've been kind of picking up the pieces since then. And obviously the emergence of Jimmy Butler as a superstar-level player has been a point in their favor. But, I think a lot of things would be very different with how this team is perceived and how they're, how they're looked at and maybe where they rank on a list like this if Derrick Rose had stayed healthy and had the career that a lot of people thought he was going to have after he won MVP.
You sound like you've been hanging around with Gar too much.
I'm just saying that's a factor. I'm not excusing it. I'm certainly not a fan of a lot of the moves that Gar has made.
You already called his handpicked coach the worst coach in the NBA.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I said one of the worst here in the coaching staff rankings, and Fred has a big hand in hiring his staff. I don't know. The Bulls have not done anything when they play basketball that makes you think that they're well put together from a coaching perspective over these couple of years. Was it? I just saw one. I don't know. Hard to argue any of those, really, to be honest. But
last year when Byron Scott was the coach of the Lakers and Randy Whitman was the coach of the Wizards.
Alvin Gentry has had a disastrous tenure in charge of the Pelicans because he could never get the defensive pairings right, and he was supposed to bring them kind of a more, modern offense, and they've been pretty bad at offense this year, and I think they turn it around defensively more, but they credit that to Ehrman, the assistant who used to work for the Warriors, who kind of serves as their defensive coordinator. So Alvin Gentry has been called into question quite a bit, too.
If you had the choice right now and you could say the Bulls could have Fred Hoiberg as their coach or Alvin Gentry, who would you pick? I think I would take Alvin Gentry.
To me, it's a toss-up. Both guys trying to install a modern offense. It's disastrous, and the results are poor. Like, I don't know. I think the main point is the coaching staff has not helped the Bulls improve. And if you're not doing that, you're in the bottom tier of the league, and that's what matters most. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, look, they got to figure it out. They got to figure it out because the Bulls are, what, 35, 39? They are, as we speak, I believe the ball tipped in the Heat-Pistons game. So by the time you listen to this podcast, the Bulls could be tied with the Heat for the eighth spot should the Heat lose, or they could be one game back of the Miami Heat for the eighth spot. Reminder, the Bulls do hold the tiebreaker over the Heat, as well as most all of the teams, I believe, that they're chasing in this playoff race. Should the Pistons get involved, they beat the Hornets 2 out of 3 this year. So if the Hornets were to sneak up, they'd also have that. But Sean, you were at practice today. What were the takeaways from the Rajon Rondo, Jimmy Butler, Fred Hoiberg comments?
Well, the main thing that people were talking about was just how much more of a ball handler role Jimmy has taken on since he started getting double teamed more. He had a career high 14 assists in the win over Milwaukee on Sunday. He talked about how he's trying to make the right play. He's been watching film of different guys getting double teamed and how they react to it. That's kind of what it is. One thing that I thought was kind of amusing was somebody asked him whether LeBron, because they play the Cavs on Thursday, someone asked whether LeBron is still the hardest player in the league to guard, and Jimmy said he didn't want to answer that because if Kevin Durant heard that he said LeBron is the hardest player to guard, he'd try to drop 60 on him next time they played each other.
Look, Jimmy's sharp. Like, he knows how to play the political game now. There's no doubt about that. In that regard, because look, Jimmy, his performance against the Bucks on Sunday was really magnificent because he is getting double teams slammed at him in a way he's never faced before. And you got to remember that, I mean, he's been really good the past 2 years, but again, he kind of ascended to another superstar level this year. I think 5 40-point games for him this year, which, that's something else, you know. That is that next tier that we've talked so much about.
And he's had double-digit assists in his last 3 games.
Yeah, he's learning that on the fly, how to deal with double teams more and more. And he said, he went out of his way to kind of say he watches tape of much better players than himself on how they deal with double teams, and he started watching more film just to see how everything goes there, because he thinks he can learn from that. Did want to get to a few of your questions for Locked On Bulls, and as always, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Follow Sean at Hike and myself at Cody Westerlin. Jay Schmeltz asks, is Dwayne Wade rehabbing like he really wants the Bulls to make a playoff run? What's the update on Dwayne Wade?
I haven't seen him, basically, since he talked he talked right after we found out what his elbow injury was. He's been on the bench at every home game. He hasn't really been traveling with the team, but just haven't really seen him. Haven't heard much about him.
Look, Dwayne Wade, everything he says to the media, I think he says with a purpose. He's very savvy, very media savvy. And I know when Derrick Rose, obviously there's a lot of the consternation in 2013 about him getting medically cleared and not coming back and just miscommunication kind of there, how that was all handled. But even remember in 2015, as the Tibbs era, the writing was on the wall for him getting fired, and Derek had that third knee injury and had the meniscus operation. And he comes back and he says, I don't know, you know, I might try to make it back for the playoffs. We'll see what happens. It's all about how I feel. Derek, did the playoffs really, really mean something for you, especially with all, you know, the controversy around Tibbs? Well, we'll just see how my body feels. That's not what people wanted to hear. Now, Dwayne Wade will tell you what you want to hear, but he also knows there's a responsibility that comes with saying something like that. And I think there's a big responsibility, too, that he feels to the organization to rise to the occasion in the playoffs because he loves the spotlight. He knows it's good for the Bulls. He wanted to restore their credibility when he came, right? So, like, these are all just weaving factors into all of this. But my answer is, yes, I truly think and believe that Dwayne Wade is going to work his butt off to be back for the playoffs because I think he loves the moment. He wants to be out there with Jimmy Butler, and he talked about restoring the Bulls' pride.
And he also, especially if they end up in a matchup with the Cavs, he's never played in a playoff series against LeBron before. That's his boy. They've both talked in the past about how they want to. We should point out that as of now, the Celtics have overtaken the Cavs for the one seed in the East, so that might not even happen if the Bulls get the eight seed. But you know, I think Dwayne Wade has every intention if he's healthy enough. He's not going to he's 35. He wants to play a few more years. He's not going to force it if he's not healthy. But if he's healthy, yeah, there's no reason he's not going to come back for the playoffs.
And right or wrong, in his mind, he still believes he can flip a switch, I think, because he was so good in the postseason last year.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, it was a throwback performance in many ways. They beat the Hornets, and then he took them to, what, six, seven games against the Raptors?
Seven.
And that was just him being spectacular. And I think he truly believes he can still do that. You know, like, I'm not saying he thinks he can throw up 25 points a game on 50% shooting against the Cavs in the first round, but he believes he has another gear or two that he can get to, and he wants to display that. So, yeah, I think Dwayne Wade is talking earnestly about this this playoff idea because he does want to be out there. Jake asks us, what are the percentage chances the Bulls re-sign Nico Mirotic and also Cristiano Felicio? I will say 99% on Cristiano Felicio.
I think it's very likely they re-sign him.
Nico.
That's a good question. It's one that I've been trying to figure out because, I mean, it's going to depend on how much money he gets offered because I feel like, you know, this is the third year in a row he's been phenomenal in the month of March. Some team is going to look at this and say he clearly has the talent to play at this level, and we think in our system, with our coaching staff, with our personnel, with our organization, he can do it consistently and talk themselves into throwing a lot of money at him, and the Bulls might not want him what match. I would say it's 20%, maybe being generous if he comes back. It would be they would have to be able to get him at a discount because I don't think they're going to want to pay $10, $11, $12, $13 million a year for him, considering how inconsistent he's been. What do you think?
These percentages always get me.
I'm bad with this.
And every time I hearken back to covering recruiting when I was just out of college, and every single fan tweets in an email question, what percent chance does this star from Southern Illinois or Chicago area, what percent chances does he have to be an Illinois Fighting Illini player? And it's always like, I don't know, it's like high school kids, you know? I'm like, you have no idea what they're thinking. I still don't think the Bulls know what they're thinking in regards to Nico Mirotic.
I don't think
Nico has an exact number yet either.
I think what's going to probably happen is they're going to wait. His people are going to wait until they see what a few other free agent deals. Because if you remember this this past free agent period, right at July 1st, right at midnight, Timofey Mozgov signs that big deal with the Lakers. Joaquim Noah. Mozgov signs that big deal with the Lakers. Joaquim Noah signs that big deal with the Knicks. And then the price is set for the guys like Jan Mahimi and Bismack Biyombo and some of these other guys. And now, like, I think Nico is probably going to sit back, let someone else set the market, and then come out and say, okay, this is the number I'm looking for if this guy gets this.
Well, who would those people be? Serge Ibaka would be one. The Raptors obviously want to retain him, right?
Well, I think everybody around the league kind of thinks that Ibaka is significantly better than Mirotic. I'm talking about more guys like Bojan Bogdanovic or some of these other guys.
Okay, I understand. But, I mean, there's still a degree there if Ibaka's getting near max money because they want to keep him.
You're not getting...
That ups the power forward showing rate,
you're not getting Nico for the mid-level exception.
No, I wouldn't think that either. But like you said, the Bulls don't want to pay him $13 million is the point. But what if the Nets come along or something? What if...
I could absolutely see
I don't know what the Rockets situation is, but they love guys who shoot three-pointers.
They have Ryan Anderson, though.
That's true.
They're paying Ryan Anderson $20 million a year.
Yeah, I don't know. Just trying to freewheel off the top of my head here. Paul Millsap's the guy that's a free agent that'll command near-max money. Pau Gasol could be a free agent for the Spurs. They're not like players whatsoever at all. So I'm not sure who exactly...
But here's the thing. Ryan Anderson got $20 million a year, and he's been great for the Rockets this year, but he got that contract when he had a history of not being able to stay healthy for several years with the Pelicans, and he got $20 million a year. I feel like Nico's going to get at least 12 or 15.
Nico's always been healthy, except for the time the Bulls totally screwed up his surgery, which wasn't his fault.
Right.
So, I don't know. If he's $10 million a year, do you bring him back? Do you have a price point on him yet? Do you need to see what happens in the last 2 weeks, really? Like, we've seen him for almost 3 years now.
I would probably not bring him back at $10 million. I don't know about you. What do you think?
I think if you are committed to Fred Hoiberg, you should bring Nico back at $10 million a year. Because that position is so vital in Fred's offense. And I know a couple guys have been throwing this around on Bulls Twitter. I think Jason Pat tweets it quite a bit. Nico and Jimmy Butler are, what, plus 12.5
yeah.
points per 100 possessions this year, proving that when they're out there, it has often worked. Now, I think there are some mitigating factors there at times when you look at five-man lineups instead of two-man, and I think there's a trickle-down effect in some ways when Nico isn't playing well. But the point stands. Those two have been a good pairing for the Bulls. And practically speaking, when he has been good, and theoretically, in Hoiberg's mind, like, Nico is so vital to that Bulls offense. I mean, you saw it Sunday in Milwaukee.
It depends.
He was there. It changes the entire game.
It depends on what they do, because if they decide they're gonna trade Jimmy and completely rebuild, then maybe you do bring back Nico, because if you're rebuilding, you can give him a little bit of a longer leash and not, you know, be so concerned about how many games you win in the season because you're trying to make the playoffs. That's kind of, I think, what's led to him falling in and out of the rotation, because he's been so inconsistent.
That's a good point. Like, whether the Bulls are win now or win later is important too. I think Nico could still have a role in either one, because he's 26. You know, it's not like he's 29 or 30 here. So it's conceivable that even if this is a 2 or 3 year rebuild, that he could be helpful before you win. I guess that could be a rebuild. You could rebuild around Jimmy and Nico still. Like, I think if Nico can play an entire season like he does the month of March, I don't know how likely that is, but if he does, you got the foundation right there just with him and Jimmy for a playoff team every year. You know what I mean?
But you're also saying if he can play like he did for the month of March when he hasn't done that for 3 seasons now.
Yeah, I know. It's a loaded question. I would have said, I think we said on this podcast as recently as a month ago, that we didn't expect, well, I mean, right after the trade deadline, we said we don't expect Nico Mirotic to be back with the Chicago Bulls because they just shopped him at the deadline and couldn't find a taker for him. This March has changed it a little bit, and I think it just depends on that price point, like we've talked about. I would probably pay Nico as the Bulls $10 million a year. I'd be a little wary if the Sixers or Nets or someone jump in. I guess Sixers wouldn't, but someone like the Nets with money would jump in and offer like $14, $15 million a year, I would probably agree with. We'll wrap the podcast up with this one, but Noah asks on Twitter, who's the best interview on the Bulls? Which player?
When he wants to be Dwayne Wade.
Rondo? Lopez? That's what Noah asks. What do you think, Rondo and Lopez?
I like Rondo when there's a reason to talk to him. Like, after a really bad loss or after he gets taken out of the rotation, he's great because he's unfiltered. I like talking to Robin. Robin's not a great quote on the record for basketball stuff, but he's really funny if you just talk to him about, like, The Simpsons or comic books or something. I like him, but I would say Dwayne Wade. I actually really like Anthony Morrow.
Okay. I've enjoyed Nico these last few weeks.
Nico's been great.
He's been really good these last few weeks when he's been better. So I guess a lot of this question also, we have to give the caveat of, how well is this person playing? You know what I mean? But Nico's been talking about his future openly, talked about how sad he was to be shopped at the trade deadline, talking about how he's been inactive. Jimmy and Dwayne are asking him to step up. When he's had good games, he's been out there and been like, yes, good game by me. He had that quote the other day and stuff. So I thought he's been more entertaining of late, no doubt. But we'll keep an eye on all of that for you. I don't think we're going to have a podcast on Wednesday because you are covering, what,
the McDonald's All-American game. We'll obviously have one after the Cavs game on Thursday.
Yeah, certainly. TNT, Cavs, Bulls streak. Well, it's at 19 for the Bulls, and I think they've beat the Cavs all three times
this year,
correct?
Yeah.
And the last game of last year, I think, so they've won at least 4 in a row, I think, against the Cavs.
They won 3 of 4 last year.
3 of 4, yeah, and all 3 this year. So Fred Hoiberg, 6-1 in his career against the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Bulls We'll see if they can keep that up as they fight for a playoff position. As always, you can follow Locked On Bulls on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Follow Sean at Hike and myself at Cody Westerlin. Locked On Bulls is also on Facebook by its name, and you can email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com.
That's right, and you can also subscribe. Make sure you find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play. Whatever method you use to listen to podcasts, you can find us. Make sure you leave us a 5-star review in iTunes. Tell your friends to subscribe and check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well. Thanks for listening.
Rush into Old Navy today for up to 50% off store-wide. Get dresses from $15 for women, $12 for girls, plus up to 75% off clearance for the whole family right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/16 to 10/20, select styles only.